Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, playoff talk. Should the NFL expand the playoff field? We'll take your phone calls on that. Cyrus Kwanjo, Buffalo's second-round draft choice, in studio with us at 7:30. And Chris Sims, 8 years an NFL quarterback. He gives the Bills an A-minus in the draft. We'll talk with him at 8 o'clock.
This is pandemonium.
Down to the one, into the end zone. Touchdown, Fred Jackson. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Sims gives them an A-minus. I said an A-minus. Like, yeah, why not an A? No, A-minus is pretty good grade. We'll hear from Chris Sims at 8 o'clock from Bleacher Report. Former Texas quarterback, played in the NFL with the Bucs, a couple of other teams. Got some pretty good insight, I believe, on the Bills and E.J. Manuel and Sammy Watkins in particular. Well, hello, welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO for this Monday night, May 19th, the final day of the Bills' rookie minicamp. That ended today. The voluntary off-season conditioning resumes tomorrow, and we are 9 days away from organized team activity. Does any of this mean anything to anybody out there? It's all the process of the off-season. Voluntary off-season conditioning, rookie minicamp, OTAs, organized team activity. Finally, we get to the mandatory minicamp June 17th through June 19th. And then, and only then, you take a couple of weeks off, you come back, and it's training camp time. The schedule moves along. It is moving very quickly. What are we looking at here? A month away from the mandatory minicamp, about 2 months away, almost exactly 2 months away from the start of training camp. 2 months. That's all. There's your summer. Well, we're going to talk about a lot tonight, including this rookie minicamp. I was here Saturday and today, and I have some observations on the rookies, and I'll share with those with you in a minute or two. You can phone in your comments and questions about that. Phone lines open, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We do want to throw this out there, too. NFL owners are meeting in Atlanta, Georgia this week, today. Actually, today and tomorrow. I believe they end tomorrow. They wrap it up tomorrow. But on the agenda, among other things, they're going to figure out where to put Super Bowl 52. That's on the agenda. They're going to talk about a couple of other items. They're going to talk about expanding the playoffs, and they're going to talk about it seriously. And it seems like that train is rolling down the tracks. Expansion of the playoffs from 12 teams to 14 teams. Two more teams in the playoff field. Not this coming season, but in the 2015 season. It probably will not be voted on this week in Atlanta, but it certainly is being discussed right now, and we want your thoughts on it as well. Expansion of the playoffs, two more teams, one in each conference, one more AFC team, one more NFC team, seven teams per conference in the playoff expansion plan. Roger Goodell's been talking about it since last fall. It's all an effort to get more television money, actually, because there'll be one more wild card playoff game. Here's how it would probably work. And again, nothing is approved yet. But it would probably be four division champions and three wild card teams. Right now, there are the four division champions and two wild card teams. Right now, there are two byes. This would eliminate one of the byes. There'd be just one top seed that would get the bye. And then the remaining six teams in each conference would go into the wild card weekend. There's a couple of ways to do it. People are talking about maybe three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday. That would probably work. There's a suggestion for one game on Friday, two on Saturday, two on Sunday, the final game on Monday. And they're talking about maybe three games, say, on a Saturday, two games on a Sunday, and one game on Monday night. They can squeeze it in, you know that. And, of course, if you play Monday night, you obviously couldn't play the next week, the divisional round, until Sunday. What they're trying to do, increase the revenue for the playoff games. The wild card playoff ratings are huge. The stadium revenue would go up as well. But the wild card revenue from TV is huge right now. According to the NFL, the four wild card games from 2013 averaged about 35 million viewers. The 49ers-Green Bay Packers game, 47 million viewers. There's money there to be made. The NFL does not like to leave any nickel on the table. So this is what's driving this, that along with the in-stadium revenue. Now, what would it mean as far as the rest of the schedule, for example? Some people think that in exchange for an expanded playoff field, they may eliminate 1 week of the preseason. I'm all for it. Three preseason games, 16 regular season games, and then the expanded playoffs. I think that's a great way to do it. And that might be what the NFL Players Association is looking for. It's unclear whether the NFLPA has to sign off on this, has to approve this. That came up, actually. Jerry Jones today said he doesn't think the NFLPA has any say in this. Some people think they do. But what they're talking about, and I think this would be a great byproduct, reducing the preseason to three games, having the 16 regular season games, and then the expanded playoff field. What would it do, an expanded playoff field? Does that mean more mediocre teams get in the playoffs? Last year, it would have been Arizona with 10 wins and Pittsburgh with 8 wins in the playoffs. It was a 17 playoff field. 8-8, that's not really a great season. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, who had a nice finishing kick, they went 6 of their last 8, they would have made the playoffs last year. But listen to this numbers. These were all crunched by ESPN. In the last 11 years, none of the teams that would have been number 7 seed, so 11 years, one per conference, 22 presumptive number 7 seeds, none of them would have had a losing record. 16 of the 22 would have been 9-win teams. 6 would have been 8-8. That's something to think about. Seattle, you remember, made the playoffs 4 years ago with just 7 wins. What about comparing the NFL to the rest of professional sports? Well, if they go to a 14-team playoff field, that'd be 44% of its teams in the playoffs. Right now, Major League Baseball has a third of their teams, 33%. The NBA and NFL, NHL, both have more than 53%. So what does it do as far as diluting the field? Not much, really. Not much. And then some people think, well, if you're going to have 14, why not 16? Give two more teams in the playoffs, and then have two byes for the top two seeds. I don't think that's a great idea. I do think it's a good way, the 14-team playoff proposal. I think it's a good way for the league to generate more revenue, which is what they do, via TV with an extra wild card playoff game. I think it's a good way to get rid of one of the meaningless preseason games, and it's a good way to stay away from an 18-game regular season, which has been thrown out there as well. Most observers think it's going to happen, probably for 2015, and some observers think it will lead to a 16-team playoff field somewhere down the line. Many fan polls suggest that they do not want to see it for whatever reason, and we want to hear from you. Playoff expansion, what do you think? Will it dilute the playoff field? Will it allow the Bills to end their 14-year playoff drought? You would hope so. Adding two teams to the playoff picture, are you in favor? League owners meeting in Atlanta this week are going to talk about it. They may not vote on it, but they're certainly going to talk about it, and it is one of the hot topics at the NFL owners meetings going on right now in Atlanta. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free from outside Buffalo. You can ring us up at 1-888-550-2550. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can go ahead and do that at John Murphy Show. An expanded playoff field, are you in favor? Do you see the benefits, including reducing the preseason by a game, including playoff action, one more good playoff game to watch? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. A couple of tweets already. Joey tweets in, no, not in favor. I love my Bills, but you got to earn it. You can't have half the league in the playoffs. As we said, it wouldn't be half the league. It would be 44% of the league. Not quite half the league. What else we got? Craig tweets in, better odds for Buffalo, but they should probably add 20 to be safe. Yeah, the Bills, I hope they would make it if they had 20 playoff teams. Austin Calhoun tweets in, the Bills need to support it so they have a chance to make it. Dr. Dan Rados tweets in, no, 12 teams enough. You don't want half the league in, especially teams with a sub-500 winning record, which already happens. It doesn't happen that much. As we said, the 2010 Seahawks with 7 wins. But in the last 11 years, if you added that 7th team over the last 11 years, there'd be 22 new playoff teams. None of them would have had a losing record if you add that 7th team. So it's an interesting question. It sounds like it's moving down that track. DJ Willie tweets in, might as well water it down just like the NHL and NBA. Not quite. Not quite. Ben Gathercole tweets in, I think it depends a lot on the format. People's opinions all over the place. Should they expand the playoffs? What do you think? 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. And you can always reach us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We'll start the calls off with Rich in Lakeview. Hi, Rich, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Murph. You know what? When I listen to this, I think this whole discussion, let alone implementation, is way overdue, especially with modern sports. I mean, you're above the sports history also, all different sports. The only reason we have playoffs in America is to increase revenue for the owners.
Right.
I mean, after the regular season was done, they like, wow, people are paying for this. I mean, even in the old NFL, I mean, years ago, they used to award the regular season the championship. I believe the 1927 Buffalo Bisons lost to the Chicago Staleys or something like that over that caveat. And, you know, why not? I mean, I think of the teams, I mean, I guess it's exciting. And, you know, when two teams are 10-6 and you have to go to point differential and common opponent, I'd rather see even, I mean, I heard you say like 16 would be diluting it. Just to even it up to make like a Super Bowl tournament like they did after the 82 season, I don't see anything wrong with that because, I mean, I'm trying to think what year the Bills after, I believe it was 74-75, they were 10-6 or 11-5, and they still didn't make it. And I think you're really kicking out some worthy teams. Like I believe you said with the ESPN stats, most of those teams, a good chunk, 16 of them, under the new format, that's a pretty good number, deserves to be in.
Let me ask you this, though, Rich, and here's an argument against it. I'm playing devil's advocate here because I think I'm on board with a 14-team playoff setup. But what does that do, not to the playoffs, what does that do to the regular season? Are we going to have games down the stretch in December that might not mean as much because you know, you're in already with 9 wins? I mean, that would worry me. I love the fact that each NFL regular season game means a lot. And to take some of the meaning out of those games, I think would be unfortunate.
You know, Murph, I think that's a great argument that you bring up. But I was a guy in the 90s that was hugely against interleague play and hugely against adding not only another wild card, but a wild card team at all. And just to give those fans in those cities, you know, take Buffalo out of the equation. Should be a chance to make the playoffs, and it just amps it up.
Yep.
It's almost like those teams in relegation in European soccer.
Yep.
You know, you have a chance of staying up, going down, and I think it brings life and brings more into the fans. I mean, when we were younger, if you would have had anybody tell you that fantasy sports were going to be this big, we would have thought they were crazy.
Right.
And, you know, does each game mean something? Each play means something in the NFL. Because each home game is so precious.
Yeah, good points.
Each regular season game is so precious.
Good points, Rich. And I, like you, in talking about baseball, when I was not in favor of interleague play, and that's been around now for, what, 10, 15 years? I didn't like wild cards in baseball. I didn't like expansion of the wild cards in baseball. Now we live with it. And the playoffs are compelling. There's no question about that. Let us know what you think. The league owners are talking about expanding the playoff field from 12 to 14. That's what they're discussing in Atlanta this week. If they do it, it would probably go into effect after the 2015 regular season. Tom from Rochester is on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm kind of against it. The only thing I did like about it, if there was something to like about it, would be to eliminate one of the preseason games. But
yeah.
Like you said, it's mainly for revenue. And the reason why I don't like it is because at some point, this is just going to oversaturate people with it. It's just going to be too much football. I mean, at some point, if you start doing Fridays or 3 games on Saturdays and two, three on Sundays, at some point, they're going to kill the cash cow. Because let's face it, the reason why we love football so much, you have to wait all season again for it. You get to it. There's only 16 games. You're waiting for the playoffs. There's only so many teams that can make the playoffs. But if you start opening it up, I mean, you're just going to start making it ho-hum. It's going to get too much. It's going to be kind of like American Idol. They did it. They did it big. And then you had other ones starting to do more and more. And they oversaturated on TV to the point where, after a while, the ratings are going to go.
Yeah, well,
I mean, people are going to say, yeah, it's just too much.
Tom, that's the Mark Cuban argument. You heard that a couple of months ago, right, when he was complaining, really, the owner of the NBA Dallas Mavericks, about Thursday Night Football coming to CBS this year, and he said it's too much. That's the Mark Cuban argument. I don't know where whenever I try to imagine where the breaking point is, where the oversaturation comes, something happens, people accept it, not only accept it, but flock to it. I mean, did you see the ratings for the draft a couple of weeks ago? Amazing ratings, television ratings. People can't get enough.
See, a lot of this, too, is based on also, let's face it, Vegas and gambling and making bets and fantasy, and there's money involved in it, and that's part of the thing that's going to make it alluring. But at some point, there's only so much you can watch. I mean, like you said, we already have Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Saturday Football. We have Thursday Night Football. At some point, you start throwing a Friday in there again, too. I mean, it's just going to be too much after a while. And I think especially a lot of your football purists are going to start taking off on it and saying, you know, maybe I'll just go over to college. Maybe I'll just watch one team from college or something, because at some point, I just think it's going to get too greedy. It's going to get too far, you know, they're just going to spread themselves too thin.
All right, Tom.
I think it's going to implode.
Thanks. Although the colleges play virtually every night of the year, many of the colleges will play whenever ESPN tells them to play these days. Here is Matt in Cheektowaga. Hi, Matt. Hello. You're on the air.
Hi, just having me on tonight. Sure. Love the show. Listen to it every day on the way home from work.
Thank you.
Have to say that I'm definitely a fan of them going to 14 teams. Definitely take a week out of the preseason to do that. I would say, you know, it's definitely a money grab, but if you look at it, one of the big things with the revenue sharing is based off of the TV revenue. So why not put a little bit more money into that pool? And I don't think you're really diluting the playoff field that much, because you've got recently two number 16 seeds in Green Bay and Pittsburgh that have won the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you've got some of those teams like Arizona last year, who was playing very well at the end of the year. And if memory serves, they went in and beat Seattle in Seattle. So why not allow a team like that, who's hot at the right time of the year, to get in and see what they can do?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And it depends. I would hate to see it diminish the importance of each regular season game. I would hate if that happened. But everybody loves playoff football. There's no question about that. A tweet in here from Milton Hogback, who says, should the Bills support it? He says, should the team that hasn't been in the playoffs in – he says 15. Should the team that hasn't been in the playoffs in 14 years support adding playoff teams? Should they even get a vote? Yeah, they get a vote. They get a vote. And maybe they care about that vote more than most, because they haven't been in 14 years. We'll revisit this, and we'll talk about this throughout the course of the week, because the NFL owners are going to talk about it this week in Atlanta at the NFL owners meetings. Expansion of the playoffs, adding two teams, one from each conference, giving the number one seed in each conference a bye, having a wild card weekend with six games instead of four. You wind up with three winners from those six games, and you move on then to the divisional round the following week. I think it might make some sense. I think it could make some sense. All right. Let's get to the news of the day, and that involves the end of the rookie minicamp, which was today here at One Bills Drive, a three-day weekend rookie minicamp. I was here Saturday and Monday. Chris Brown covered it yesterday, and there was no question who the standout was. It was Sammy Watkins, the first-round draft pick, as you might expect. Caught everything thrown his way, and sometimes he had to struggle. The Bills only had one quarterback in camp, Kenny Guyton, the former backup from Ohio State. Can you imagine that guy? You imagine how much ice is on that guy's arm tonight after three full days of throwing? No other quarterbacks here. But, yeah, Sammy Watkins looked really good against this group, against air. It was all the closest thing to football work they did was one-on-ones, quarterback receiver versus defensive backs. And obviously there's no contact, there's no pads, but Sammy Watkins looked really good. Caught everything thrown his way. Great way. He has a great knack for tucking the ball and heading upfield as quickly as he gets it. Very impressive to see. You can see the run after the catch. And what was most impressive from Sammy Watkins, I thought, was his work ethic. They talked today about Sammy Watkins coming in at 6:45 this morning, hours before he had to be on the field to get ready. But after today's rookie minicamp session, head coach Doug Marrone gave an overall assessment of the 3 days of work with the young Buffalo Bills.
Obviously, we finished up today just now. It was a good weekend. I think that we've accomplished, you know, what we set out to do, you know, making sure that they learn and train, you know, the players, getting them ready for, you know, when the veteran players come back. Obviously, this is the end of the rookie minicamp. I think next on the agenda for us, obviously, we're still in a phase two this week, so the players will be back in working out the next couple of days. Then really it'll step up, you know, the following week. Obviously, Memorial Day, you know, players are off. Tuesday's a travel day, and then we'll hit the OTA. So, you know, we're excited about that. And then seeing how you know, the rookies here today, you know, transition into those OTAs. So, you know, that's where we are.
Doug Marrone, and it's 9 days away, the start of the organized team activity. The rookies, most of them, I would think, many of them will stick around to work with the veterans in the voluntary off-season conditioning camp, which continues. Off-season conditioning program continues through the rest of this week and into early next week. Doug Marrone, after the workout today, was asked, what's one thing that he hopes and expects that his players took, his rookies took, out of these 3 days here? What's the one value that he hopes they grasped after 3 days of work with the coaching staff?
You have to ask them, but that's what our goal is, you know, to make sure that they do understand that. Because what we're trying to get them to understand is that, you know, here they have the one-on-one, here they can ask the questions, and, you know, there's a lot of things you have to do in the environment to help them, too. In other words, I'll give you an example of myself. When I was a player and I came into this league, you know, the veteran players, they'd always tell the younger guys, hey, don't ask any questions in this meeting, you know, things like that. And I think what we have to do as coaches is understand that, hey, you know, the veteran players are going to do that, but there's a time, you know, you may break the meeting 10 minutes early so the veteran players can go out, but the younger players are going to be able to ask that. You know, but I think when you have the right type of, when it's really working well, you have the communication, the veteran players are also coaching the younger players. And I think when you get that, you know, that's where you want to be, and that's what you're always getting to. A lot of times we, you know, I know in my past I've used it as a technique. I would put, you know, an offensive lineman, an older guy with a younger guy, you know, and then when the younger guy made a mistake, I'd yell at the older guy, you know. So I think there's things that you can do. But to answer your question, when you have that type of team and those things are going on within the team, that's a good sign.
Head coach Doug Marrone talking about veteran leadership for the rookies, who he wrapped up his 3 days with here today. And think about it, the veterans on this roster, there's not a whole lot of, you know, gray beards. There's not a whole lot of older veterans. So the difference between the veterans and the young guys is not that great. One other Bills note, and this came out yesterday, the Bills announcing that the legendary voice of the Bills, Van Miller, is going to be this year's enshrinee to the Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame, the first broadcaster to receive any NFL team's top honor. 37 years, Van was the play-by-play voice of the Bills. I had the honor to work alongside of him for 16 of those seasons. Spoke with him last week when we voted him in. Spoke with him again this morning. He's very excited about it, and a well, you know, deserved honor when you look at the longevity of his career and the quality of his play-by-play broadcast. Can I tell you how hard it is to follow up a guy after, like that, who's been in several Halls of Fame? He's in the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. He's in the Chautauqua County Sports Hall of Fame. He's in the Buffalo Broadcasters Hall of Fame. He's honored by the Pro Football Hall of Fame with the Pete Rozelle Radio Television Award. He's just had a remarkable career, set the bar so very high, not just for me, but for anybody doing play-by-play in the NFL, and it certainly is a great honor. And I look forward to the day coming up this fall when Van Miller is enshrined on the Bills Wall of Fame. It should be a great day coming up in that game, New England game, on Sunday, October 12th. Van Miller, he's excited. He didn't want it. He didn't want the honor. We talked him, kind of had to twist his arm the other day when we had the vote. He wanted Cornelius Bennett, a deserving candidate, no question. But Van said, you got to put a player in. But his candidacy eventually carried the day because of the quality of his work and the longevity that he had as the play-by-play voice of the Bills. And he's going in. So we're really excited about that. And I think he's come around to thinking right now, yeah, this is kind of cool. At least when I talked to him this morning, I got that sense. Congratulations, the great Van Miller, going on the Bills Wall of Fame this October. All right, we're going to take a break, and we will revisit the question about playoff expansion. Do we need two more teams? Do we want two more teams? Does it benefit the Buffalo Bills, who haven't been in the playoffs for 14 years? You would think it does. We're going to talk to one of the newest Bills, though, when we return, and one of the most interesting characters on the roster already, second-round draft pick Cyrus Kwanjo, native of Cameroon in Africa, who is doing a pretty good job at right tackle through this rookie minicamp. He'll be in studio with us when we return, Cyrus Kwanjo. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bills rookie minicamp wraps up today. The rookies, many of them sticking around, including our guest in studio with us, offensive tackle Cyrus Quandjo, the Bills' second-round draft pick from Alabama. Thanks for coming by here, Cyrus.
I'm glad to be here.
We talked to you day two of the draft, the Friday night, probably half hour after you were drafted. Your head had to be spinning back then, huh, a couple of Fridays ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of emotion going on around that time, you know. I'm glad to be here, though.
Folks, I didn't watch it. We had it on TV, but I didn't notice this. But people have made the observation that you did not appear to be happy that you were drafted in the second round. Is that what was going through your head at that point?
I mean, you could say that. I feel as if, I don't know, but I think this is the right spot for me, to be honest with you. Because, yeah, I think I could have gone a little bit higher from what I've shown in my film and stuff like that. And, of course, I had to swallow my pride, but I'm happy to be here, you know.
What do you think held you back? Was it the reports of your knee? Is that what maybe put you in the second round, early second round, as opposed to the first?
Yeah. It was my knee. That's why I respect the Buffalo Bills organization so much, because they understand that, I mean, look at the facts. I played 2 years straight, no practices, no games missed because of my knee, and they understood that, and they took that in. You know, they had a lot of faith in me, and it's showing, you know, nothing's wrong with my knee. Everybody now sees that, hey, there's nothing wrong with my knee.
Yeah. That's the first thing the GM, Doug Whaley, said that night. He said he hasn't missed a practice, hasn't missed a game in 2 years, so what's the problem? And and they were on to that. I was thinking about that. It's almost like when that story kind of came out around the time of the combine, everybody at the combine, we're guilty of it too, needs something to talk about. That became something to talk about, it seems like, back then in late February.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was confusing to me. I thought it was a joke, actually, when I heard it from my agent the first time right after the combine. He was like, something wrong with your knee? I'm like, I said to myself, is this a joke? Because where does this come from? You know, my knee hasn't been a problem for 2-3 years now. So it just came back, and it was a problem.
Yeah. Did you know all along that the Buffalo Bills were interested, Cyrus, throughout the whole run-up to the draft?
No, not at all. I did have a meeting with them. I had a visit with them, so I came out to visit here. But I was the last person to visit on the last day, so I had no idea.
What did you think of your visit when you came here?
I mean, I like the area. The thing I like the most is the people around here. You know, I see a lot of humility. I see a lot of, you know, a lot of fans that are crazy about their football. The same as it was for me back in Alabama, and I can relate. So I like that a lot.
We're with Cyrus Quandjo, the Bills' second-round draft pick, the offensive tackle from Alabama. Your path to Alabama is pretty interesting. I know you've talked about it a lot, but you came to America from Cameroon as age four, I guess, at the time, right?
Yes, sir, four or five.
And not much indoctrination to football until when, high school?
Oh, yeah, sophomore year of high school.
What they must have recruited you, I think, right? DeMatha, they wanted you
They kind of sort of recruited me, but I actually went there for the education.
It's a great school, isn't it, DeMatha?
Yeah, it is.
With
it
a great
is.
Tradition. I mean, it's a basketball school, but a great tradition of kind of molding young men, right? Where is it?
Definitely.
Right outside D.C., right?
Yes, sir. In Hightsville, Maryland. They call it D.C. because it's so close.
Right. What did you get out of the DeMatha experience, not just from a football sense, but from everything else?
I mean, the motto at DeMatha is DeMatha's gentleman and scholar. So a lot of my principles that I have to this day, a lot of things that I stand on, I learned from DeMatha. And, you know, it's been standing strong since.
Did you play soccer there at DeMatha at first?
No, sir.
So you were exposed to soccer growing up as a kid?
Yeah, I played soccer as a kid. I mean, that was a sport. That was a sport in Africa where we come from. That was the main sport that had the most popularity all over the world. And soccer, I played soccer, played basketball, played baseball. And none of them really worked out. So, hey, I said, hey, let's just try football. So I played football, and it worked.
Is football your favorite? Were you drawn to it? Why?
Definitely.
Why?
I mean, it's just, basketball didn't work because I always got fouled out and I got, you know, frustrated. You know, after your third, you know, every game I get fouled out. Soccer didn't work because they kept putting me at goalie and I was boring for me. Baseball didn't work because it was just too slow for me. I love football, you know, because, you know, I can't get fouled out and get to be physical, get to use my size, and get to have fun.
Cyrus, when did the recruiting process for college football start for you, and what did you think of it as you got involved in that?
Well, I had my first scholarship from Pittsburgh at the end of my sophomore year.
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't understand. I don't know why they gave me a scholarship. they seen something in me that I didn't see. So I said, hey, I mean, everybody started saying I'm good, so let me work hard at this So at the end of my junior year, I had almost 60 offers.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big were you back then, sophomore, junior, in high school? Height?
Oh, like 6'5", 6'6".
Wow.
Yeah, like
that's
two,
what they saw, right? They saw the frame and the height and everything?
I mean, I did play. I played really well.
Yeah.
You know, I made big plays, but, you know, it was nothing. It was simple to me.
Are your parents, you know, taller or larger? I mean, is this coming?
No, my dad's about 6 feet. My mom's about 5. She's a little bit taller, 5'6".
Uh-huh. And your brother played with you at Alabama. Did you go through the recruiting process together, or did you kind of lean on each other?
He was my older brother.
Right.
And he actually went to Alabama first, and then I kind of followed him over there.
Did I read you went to Auburn first, or you committed to Auburn?
Yeah, this is a funny situation. On national TV, I still hadn't had my mind set on which school I wanted to go. So it was National Signing Day, national TV. I'm a young kid.
Yeah.
What, I was 17. All these cameras in my face, they say, make a choice. I didn't know what to say. So, I mean, I just got done with the Auburn trip, so I said, I'm going to Auburn. I decided not to sign anything, and a couple of days afterwards, I thought it'd be better for me to go to Alabama.
Did your brother play a role in that decision? Did you want to play with him or alongside
him?
No.
I respect the stand he had, and his stand was, you know, Cyrus, this is a huge decision for you. I don't want no part. I just say, hey, follow your heart, because, you know, if something goes good, if something goes bad, I don't want to be blamed for anything, good or bad. I want you to be, you know, it's a decision for you. You need to make it.
Tell me about the Alabama experience. You played in big games at the highest level of college football, and I would imagine you got some pretty good coaching from that coaching staff there.
Definitely. I mean, it was a winning tradition. You know, my high school winning tradition. Same thing as the Mantha. Same thing as Alabama. You know, winning tradition. Work really hard. Push each other. You know, day in, day out. I went there for 3 years, and out of those 3 years, two of those years I had a national championship ring, or I won a national championship. Had an okay season the last season. Didn't finish well. We ended up getting two losses last season, which was unacceptable, really, in that town of Alabama. But I had a good time.
Were you okay with that kind of pressure, that kind of a season, a two-loss season, is unacceptable?
I mean, it's not even pressure. It's who we are and what we do. You know, we're so used to winning, and we're so – it's not even pressure. It's just like it's who we are. And when we deviate from what we are, it's upsetting, you know, but you don't get a sense of pressure like, yeah, we got to get back up there. No, we just got to keep doing what we do and do it better.
We're with Cyrus Kwanjo, Bill's second-round draft pick, the offensive lineman from Alabama Crimson Tide. I read and heard this, that before the draft, you were actually praying that you'd wind up in maybe a smaller market like Buffalo. Is that true?
No, not really. I like to think that I have a good relationship with my religious leader, which is God, Christ. I pray a lot, you know. And I feel as if I know how he operates and know how he works now, because I feel as if he'd be leading me through a lot through my life. And I thought to myself, okay, if he just wants me to let me go, if he wants to let me go, let me fly it or whatever, I think he'd put me somewhere like, you know, somewhere with a huge market or something like that, like a Miami, stuff where it's easy to get on, to lose focus. But I said, you know, knowing him, I'm probably going to end up somewhere like Buffalo. I remember those exact few words I told my brother. I tell him, hey, he's probably going to put me somewhere like Buffalo. And, you know, behold, here I am.
Because you think that would be better for you? Is that true?
Yeah. Definitely.
In what ways?
I mean, it's just easy for me to stay focused around these type of guys, around this type of environment, around this coaching staff. I don't think there's a lot going on, like, crime wise.
Right. You know, not a lot of glitz around
here.
Yeah,
not a lot of all that stuff. And I think it's a perfect place for me to come here and just focus on my football and mastering my craft.
One of the things you said at a press conference here last week was that you've only lost like 7 games, high school and college, over the years.
Yeah. I think it was 6 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just same winning traditions I came into, and you know, I'm glad to be here. I want to be a part of the team that comes back. I want to be a part of a winning Buffalo team.
In the short time you've been here, can you tell that it's a franchise and even a city that's starved for a winner? It's been 14 years without a playoff spot here.
Yeah. The fans that we have here, I understand that, you know, they take their football serious. So, I could understand that.
Cyrus Kwanjo, our guest, the Bills' offensive lineman, the second-round pick from Alabama. So a couple of these practices in the books, and they, you know, there's not contact, but it seemed to me a lot of good individual instructions in the three-day minicamp that you guys just wrapped up. I mean, they're down to really the nitty-gritty of techniques out there, aren't they?
I mean, that's what it is. That's what minicamp's for. I mean, they take us in, and I mean, we're in the film room, and we're in a meeting room a lot longer than we're out there on the field, so... They're teaching us new things. They're kind of like reloading things in our head, you know, taking stuff out and teaching us new things, tell us to forget some things. And it's just a new thing, and we have to learn it. And that's what rookie minicamp is for.
I watched one drill where you and the other linemen, two at a time, are on your knees, and it seems like it's all an effort to get your hands in place as quick as you can off the snap of the ball, right?
Yeah, that's something else that I've never done before. It's a drill to work on your hips. And your hands, quickening your hips and your hands.
Is it different kind of coaching than you get even at a major program like Alabama? Do they break it down to the raw fundamentals even in a big program like that?
Basically, it's all the same. But to tell you the truth, every coach has his own theory. So the offensive line coach in Delaware and the offensive line coach here in Buffalo are two different theories. But the way the team operates is what counts, and it's pretty similar.
I know you've had the rookie minicamp. Have you had a chance to interact with any of the veterans, including the guys on the offensive line here yet?
Yeah, definitely. I've been here since Monday, so we had a few workouts with the older guys, and I got to get a good feel of, you know, how the guys are.
What do you think? What do you think of that group there? Is, like most teams, the offensive line is a pretty tight-knit group.
Definitely. I mean, every offensive line has to be a tight-knit group. And that's exactly how they were, you know.
They seem to have you penciled in at right tackle. Just talk about that and maybe the expectation for you to step in and play right away, I would think, huh?
I came here, I'm working for a position. I'm not used to, you know, hey, Cyrus, come here, you're starting. If that's the case, I don't know about it. They haven't told me. All I know is that I came here to compete. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do everything I can for the success of the team as a whole.
Cyrus, you've finished the three-day rookie minicamp. What's next, the next week or so? What does that look like for you?
To tell you the truth, I'm taking it day for day. So, you know, I'm not going to put anything in my head to discourage me for the next couple of days. I'm not sure.
You just show up for work tomorrow.
Probably. Tonight I'll look at the schedule tomorrow, and I'm gonna take that chunk. When I'm done with that, I throw that aside and look at it the next day. You know, that's I feel as if that's the best way for me to go about this business.
Really good to meet you. Thank you for coming in here.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your
time. Cyrus Kwanjo, offensive tackle, second round pick for the Buffalo Bills. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Cyrus Kwanjo, he's an interesting guy. Got a lot to talk about. We sat and talked for about 15 minutes after the interview. Just a really good guy and a hard worker. What a serious approach, too, talking about how much he wanted to play in a place like Buffalo so he can focus on football. I'm getting good vibes from Cyrus Kwanjo. The Bills rookie minicamp wrapped up today. You can see highlights on our website, buffalobills.com. Chris Brown and I with our Bills roundup package. You can see some of those Sammy Watkins catches that everybody's talking about. Hear from head coach Doug Marrone. We're going to hear from Marrone and Sammy Watkins coming up next hour as well. And also next hour, we're going to hear from Chris Sims, former NFL quarterback. 8 years, a couple of different teams, including the Tampa Bay Bucks. Former Texas quarterback. His father is Phil Sims. He works now for Bleacher Report and is a NFL analyst, and he likes the Bills draft. We'll talk to him about that. Chris Sims coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Hey, if you haven't done so already, you should try to download the Buffalo Bills Touch app. It's for your iPod, iPad, your Windows or Android tablet device. The Bills have a draft review there, all kinds of great interactivity. There's also a stadium renovation guide with an interactive video tour, a behind-the-scenes video, along with the photo galleries updated regularly, and a lot more. You can download the Buffalo Bills Touch free in the Apple iTunes Store, the Windows App Store, and the Google Play Store. And you can tap into this essential tool that brings you closer to the Bills than ever before. Buffalo Bills Touch. It's free. You can download it at Apple iTunes, Windows App Store, or Google Play Store. Look for that, the Bills Touch app. We'll take a break for the top of the hour. When we return, we'll be on the line with Chris Sims, former NFL quarterback who really likes what he saw the Bills do in the NFL draft. He's coming up next. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, and rookie minicamp wrapped up today. We're still getting to know some of these rookies who are in camp with the Buffalo Bills. And joining us on the line, the NFL analyst for Bleacher Report. He spent 8 years in the league as a quarterback. Chris Sims is on the line with us. Chris, thank you very much for being on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, we just got our first look the last 3 days at the Bills rookies, but you saw what the Bills did in the draft a couple of weeks ago, Chris, and on Bleacher Report, on one of your analysis of the draft, you gave the Buffalo Bills an A- for the draft. Tell me why you like their draft so much.
Oh, well, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, the first thing I think you just got to start off with is you got the best offensive player in the NFL draft this year in Sammy Watkins. I think he's an instant superstar the second he walks on the field, an instant number one wide receiver. So that, of course, starts it. And then, you know, the other big thing, just to throw some names out there, is, of course, some of the offensive linemen you got. Cyrus Kwanjo from Alabama played left tackle there, ideally suited for right tackle in the NFL. I thought he was the best true right tackle in the draft. You got Cyril Richardson from Baylor at guard, who was very promising prospect as well, good in the run game, maybe needs some help as far as technique-wise in the pass game. And then maybe you got Chantrell Henderson, who was probably a first- or second-round type talent in the seventh round. So there's a lot of positives about what you guys did in the draft. And, of course, Buffalo's done an amazing job with their roster the last 2 years through free agency as well. So it's on the up and up for you guys up there.
Chris, let me take you back to the first pick, to the pick of Sammy Watkins. What makes you think he'll be an instant superstar?
Well, I just think his combination of size, speed, strength, his hands, his fearlessness to go over the middle. Of course, he'll be a deep threat as far as the passing game is concerned. But what makes him more dangerous is what he can do after the catch. And as far as guys out in the draft this year, there was nobody better after the catch than Sammy Watkins. He almost becomes a running back once he gets the ball in his hands. He's like C.J. Spiller once he gets the ball in his hands. So that's what's scary about him. You can throw him a screen pass. He can run 70 or 80, break a few tackles, whatever it be. Just extremely dynamic with size, speed, and playmaking ability.
You know, he's came through these last 3 days looking very good in a crop of 30 or so rookies and undrafted free agents. But one of the things head coach Doug Marrone said about Sammy Watkins, and you know how coaches are, they don't want to overpraise him after a weekend of work. But he also said that, you know, he wants to see, he said, in order to play wide out in this league, you have to beat press coverage. And he says, we won't be able to find that out until camp. Is that something to be concerned with when it comes to Sammy Watkins, how he fares against press coverage?
I really don't. I think you have to concern at all. Usually, you know, in my experience, 8 years in the NFL, all the years watching my dad play for the Giants, when you have a guy that has the quickness and, like I said, the size, the strength, the explosive burst off the line of scrimmage, I wouldn't worry about his ability against jam coverage. Yeah, he didn't see it a whole lot as far as press man-to-man in college because teams were so scared of his speed. But, again, the physical ability is there. Getting off of bump and run and jam, all that, that can be taught. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of a learning curve, but I don't think it's anything that's going to be tough for him to adjust to. If there's one thing I got to say he probably needs to learn more than anything is, you know, a very limited route tree at Clemson. They didn't do a whole lot offensively. He either ran a go or a hitch route or just a slant route. So those are, you know, some of the things I think he'll continue to have to work on, too, is just his all-around route-running ability.
Well, it's really interesting you mention that, Chris, because in his self-analysis of his first weekend here, Sammy Watkins talked about how he's learning so much more about running routes and the precision with which he has to run routes in the NFL. Is that underrated as far as fans and maybe outsiders? What it, you know, it's one thing to beat guys at the college level, but you do, there is a level of precision you have to have at the NFL at wide receiver, right?
No doubt about it. You're playing better defenses. You're playing better corners and safeties. You got quarterbacks who are making split-second decisions. And of course, it's just there's just so much more inventory to an offense in the NFL as compared to college. His route tree, he's going to run so many different routes that he never even attempted to run in college, whether he lines up in the slot or he's outside, he comes down in motion, all the different formations. Like I said, in Clemson, he was kind of in offense 101. Now he's getting with Nathaniel Hackett there up there in Buffalo. And I know what kind of offense Nate runs. I was with him in Tampa Bay for a little bit under John Gruden. He's going to have it all in. So there's certainly some learning there as far as running the routes and what he'll have to, of course, be accountable for mental-wise in the playbook.
One more thing about Sammy Watkins, Chris. In a video piece you did on Bleacher Report, you talked about how Watkins is the type of receiver who comes around every 4 or 5 years. What are we talking about? An A.J. Green type, a Julio Jones? Who would you compare him to?
He's a tough comparison, but I did say that. You're right. I'm glad that you're listening to my work. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Come on, yeah.
I think he is, yes, I thought he was the best receiver to come out since the Julio Jones, A.J. Green type draft. You know, he's different than those two guys. I think he's more explosive and going to be better than both of them, and I know that's saying a lot. I had said in videos that I thought Sammy Watkins was the best all-around wide receiver prospect to come out since Megatron. Of course, Calvin Johnson up in Detroit came out of Georgia Tech. You know, just his ability to do everything like I hit on earlier, of course his ability to run with the ball in his hand, but he's very impressive jumping up and catching, you know, the so-called 50-50 ball. You know, when you're 6 foot, 210 pounds, and you can run and jump like Sammy Watkins, the sky is the limit. He ran a 4.41 at the combine, and honestly, he's the type of guy that plays faster than that speed. So I really expect big things out of him. And like I said, I truly think he's an instant superstar this year.
We're live on the line with Chris Sims, 8 years in the league as a quarterback. He's now an analyst analyzing the NFL for Bleacher Report. Let me take you through some of these offensive linemen in the Bills draft that you've had some things to say about. Cyrus Quanjo, you describe him as great in the run game and underrated in pass protection. Can you elaborate on that, Chris?
Well, the one knock on Quanjo was his foot speed as far as pass protecting. At a left tackle position, of course, you have to go against the premier pass rushers when you're a left tackle. And I know that was a knock on him. Of course, we know about the injured knee that some teams are scared of. But I thought when you watch him throughout his last few years of play at Alabama, he very rarely gets beat. Even when his feet are a little slow and maybe moving in the mud at times, he has such great size and length in his arms that even though maybe his body is not in great position, his arms and his just pure size allow him to push people by the quarterback, even though he's not technically in great position. So that is why I say he's underrated as a pass protector. He's great from the standpoint if you lose your left tackle, he's a guy that's certainly going to be capable to go over there and man down the position and not be overwhelmed by anybody in the NFL coming off that side.
The fifth rounder, Cyril Richardson, the offensive lineman, the guard, you mentioned that he might not start right away, but he might benefit from not starting right away by having a chance to sit and learn for a little bit, huh?
Yes, I do think so. He's got some tremendous upside. He's extremely good in the run game, like I was saying earlier. He's very good at getting to the second level, getting on linebackers. He gets tremendous push off the ball. But, you know, in that Baylor offense, which we're seeing now, the spread offense in college football, some of these offensive linemen, they just don't do a whole lot as far as what's asked them to do as far as different run-blocking schemes and different pass-blocking schemes. So I do think he's a guy that will benefit just learning the ways of the NFL for a year, refining technique. If you do watch him at Baylor, there are times in pass protection he doesn't move his feet. He kind of leans on people and falls off balance. And I would say some of that is probably the way he was coached in college and the system he was in. Both together are kind of the perfect storm there. But overall, a very talented guy. And like I said, Buffalo, they got to be happy with some of these picks.
Well, one more pick to ask you about, and just stay with the offensive lineman, the seventh rounder, Chantrell Henderson from University of Miami, a guy who's got tremendous talent but a lot of questions about his checkered past. How much of a risk is that for the Bills to take him in the seventh round? What do you think of that pick?
Well, as a seventh-round pick, there's really not much risk. I mean, hey, it's almost like signing a free agent, just a rookie free agent. He's a guy that listen, I've been around some guys in the NFL who had checkered past, and they get in the NFL locker room, and they realize, man, this is it right here. This is pretty cool. Coaches are treating me like a man. I got other men around me teaching the ways of the NFL, and you're getting a paycheck. That can all straighten out players at time in a hurry. But an extremely talented individual. I thought Chantrell Henderson was more talented than Juwan James, who the Miami Dolphins took at pick number 19 from the Tennessee Volunteers. So that's how highly I thought of Chantrell Henderson. Of course, the off-the-field stuff does scare you. You hope he matures and has some good role models there in Buffalo. And I read today that they said he's on a one-strike outing there up in Buffalo. So that should let him know that it's all business from here on out. But extremely talented. And with the three offensive linemen you guys got up in Buffalo and the draft, those are guys that could contribute to your team for a lot of years to come.
Chris, I just have a couple of other questions for you. One of them dealing with the draft in general, and in particular, the Bills' big move up to trade away next year's first rounder to move up five spots to go get Sammy Watkins. Some people think that was too steep a price to pay. What do you think?
Well, I'm usually one to say that it is a steep price to pay that. You're giving up a first-round pick for a player. But as you know, and it sounds like you've seen a few of my videos and just from hearing me talk today about Sammy Watkins, I think he's the type of player that you do go up and maybe take the risk, you know, slash reward chance on a guy like him, kind of like Atlanta did a few years ago with Julio Jones at the wide receiver position. It's a passing game in the NFL right now. We all know that. You've got a good young quarterback who your franchise is invested in. You need some players around him to help him succeed as well. And, you know, you're getting a guy like this with the rookie pay scale now. You're getting a premier player for almost nothing as far as costing your team. I don't see anything wrong with the move, and honestly, I give them a lot of credit for doing it.
We're on the line with Chris Sims, former NFL quarterback, NFL analyst for Bleacher Report, and just a couple of more questions for you, Chris. And this one deals with the nature of that big move up, the drafting of Sammy Watkins. The Bills kind of push all of their chips into the middle of the table to back up E.J. Manuel, to try to get better around E.J. Manuel. From his first year, in his 10 games in his rookie year, what do you think of that? What do you think of E.J. Manuel and the prognosis for him in the future?
Well, there was some good, there was some bad. I mean, of course, I love his size, his athletic ability. If I did have questions, I do think he needs to improve on his throwing. And when I say throwing, I think he's got to continue to be a more aggressive, consistent thrower. He got to be able to throw the ball down the field with a little bit more power and precision to become an elite passer in the NFL. I think that is something that he definitely has to work on. But at the end of the day, at least he's got some tools to work with now, and that's half the battle in the NFL. But, you know, of course, we got Sammy Watkins, who's a game breaker. I was a big fan of Robert Woods coming out of USC last year. And then you got maybe the most explosive running back in all of football right now, C.J. Spiller. So there's a lot there for him to grow. And I will say this, from my years in the NFL, my comfort level from year one to year two, there's no price tag or amount you can put on that, how much you grow as a quarterback from year one to year two. He'll be a lot more comfortable in his surroundings, in his mentality as far as playbook, everything like that. I expect him to have a good year. And of course, like I said, I'm a big Nate Hackett fan. I know he'll coach him up the right way.
Yeah, you work with Nate. Nate comes from a great pedigree, doesn't it? From not just his father, but guys like Gruden that you mentioned. He had some time here with Alex Van Pelt, who's pretty highly regarded. Nathaniel Hackett has kind of a lot of things working that would bode pretty well for him down the road, wouldn't you think?
Yes, he does. He's got a lot of toys to play with. You know, Nate runs a West Coast-type offense, but he certainly added his own style and wrinkles to the offense. And, you know, just with all those weapons and EJ's size and ability to move the pocket and do things like that as well, it's going to make them a very tough offense to defend, that's for sure. And, you know, another reason I give the Sammy Watkins trade such big kudos for the Buffalo Bills organization is I truly believe you guys are on the verge of a team that's, you're ready. You're ready for the playoffs. Your defense is certainly up to par last year, and it's only gotten better this offseason. So sometimes when you feel like, oh, man, we're only a player or two away from being a serious contender, you got to push the chips in the table and go for it. And that's why I think it was such a great decision by the Bills to go in for Sammy Watkins.
Chris, who knew you were such a Bills supporter? Your dad does not do a whole lot of Bills games because they don't wind up as the number one CBS game. And I guess I'm surprised that you actually follow the Bills so closely and kind of get what's going on up here.
Well, I support a lot of teams, and I'm a guy that, you know, of course, been around the NFL my whole life. I don't really root for any one team anymore. I kind of root for the people I know around the league. And as I've said many times already, Nate Hackett is certainly one of those guys I really do root for. And you got a lot of players up there that I just, for whatever reason, I like as well. But that's part of my new job at BleacherReport.com. I'm kind of a four-man GM for every team in the NFL. So I might not have all the answers, but I got a few.
Chris, we appreciate you spending the time with us tonight. Thank you very much. It's good to talk with you.
Anytime, guys. Be good.
Chris Sims, he is an NFL analyst for Bleacher Report. He spent 8 years in the NFL playing quarterback. You know his dad, Phil Sims, and he's done some college football broadcasting as well. Some great perspectives from Chris Sims. Really enjoyed talking to Chris Sims, and I said I was surprised that how closely he followed the Bills and the Bills draft. That interview, we reached out to Chris Sims based on a suggestion, really, from a listener. I assume it was a listener. It came via Twitter earlier today. Christopher Davis tweeted in and said, you should get Chris Sims on the show because he gives the Bills an A-, and I looked into it, saw the kind of work he was doing at Bleacher Report and what he had done at Fox and some other places, and said, yeah, I like this take on a lot of things. Chris Sims, he's got the background, and he hasn't played in the league since 2010. He started a total of 16 NFL games. You know, Tampa Bay drafted him back in 2003, and he played 8 seasons in the league. He's 33 years old now. He started 10 games for the Bucs in 2005. Obviously, had some struggles. His career final stats, Chris Sims had 12 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, a completion rate of, a quarterback rating, I should say, of 69.1. So things did not go well for him by the numbers, didn't win a lot, but obviously he thinks through the game pretty well and picked up a lot from his father. I can foresee some future broadcasting jobs for Chris Sims. Like what he had to say, some of the insights he had. Obviously, he liked the Bills draft, A-. He didn't mind the trade-up to get Sammy Watkins. I like what he had to say about E.J. Manuel, and I agree. I concur. I've been saying something similar to this for the last few months about what needs to happen for E.J. Manuel moving forward. Chris Sims talked about how he'd like to see him be more aggressive and consistent in his throws. I agree with that. Throwing down the field with power. I agree with that. I think I put it on our show, and I've talked about this a couple times. I'd love to see the Bills turn Chris Sims loose a little bit. Take the wraps off. Let him throw it deep. Let him throw into tight coverages. Did I say Chris Sims? No, I don't want Chris Sims playing here. No offense. I'd like to see the Bills let E.J. Manuel take the wraps off and let him fire it down the field. Let him throw it into coverage, tight coverages, not to take unnecessary risks, but take some more risks than he took last year. You know, try to make some bigger plays than he attempted to last year. I like what EJ did, but I think it's time to extend him a little bit. And the other thing that Chris Sims said about EJ Manuel relating to his own experience in the league, his own perspective, the comfort level from year one to year two. He said, I can't even tell you how much more comfortable you are in your second year. I think we're all kind of looking forward to that from EJ Manuel going into the year. So some good perspective from Chris Sims. I think we should get him on once in a while. And in fact, Kyle H. just tweeted in, you should have Chris Sims on all the time. Guy loves the Bills. Yeah, that's one reason. I guess the real reason would be his insight. And I think he does have insight into the Buffalo Bills and it appears to the rest of the NFL. You can catch him on BleacherReport.com. Chris Sims, the former Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight from One Bills Drive. We have phone lines open if you would like to chime in on anything Chris Sims said or anything about the Bills draft or about this rookie minicamp that just ended. That's on the table. Van Miller's enshrinement, his election to the Bills Wall of Fame. We can talk about that tonight on the show. And we can talk about the issue that I put out there at 7 o'clock. That would be the expansion of the playoffs. Owners are meeting in Atlanta, Georgia right now, tonight and tomorrow. They are not expected to vote on this issue in the next day or two, but it's coming, and it looks like it's coming after the 2015 season, an expansion of the playoffs from the current 12 teams to 14 teams. How do you feel about that? Are you on board with that? I went through some of the reasons in the first hour. It has to do with, getting more revenue from television, adding one more wild card playoff game for television on the first wild card weekend. The top seed in each conference would get a bye. There'd be three other games in each conference involving six teams, and then you'd have three winners plus the top seed in each conference. So then you get into the divisional round with four teams from each conference. It makes some sense, and it especially makes sense from my perspective if you couple that with elimination of one of the preseason games. I think that would be a way to make it palatable, sellable to the players. It's unclear whether the players have to agree on it. Is it part of the collective bargaining agreement or not? Certainly an 18-game regular season would be, but there are differing opinions on whether the Players Association would have to sign off on another wild-card playoff game and two wild-card playoff teams in the NFL for the 2015 season. Maybe they can bypass it by just getting rid of one of the preseason games. I think the players would go for that. Well, give us your thoughts on that. Phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. I spent two of the last 3 days watching the Bills at the rookie minicamp. And when we return, we're going to talk about that. Some more of my observations, in particular, observations about Sammy Watkins, who was the standout, the star of the recent weekend minicamp. Stick around. We've got more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here till 9 o'clock tonight, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Bills wrapped up their rookie minicamp today. They continue the voluntary offseason conditioning program for the next week and a half or so, and then organized team activity. I feel like there should be an echo when I say that. Organized team activity. That starts 9 days away. It starts next Wednesday. Organized team activity. I was able to watch practices, at least what counted for practices at these rookie minicamps. Watch the rookies out there, about 30 of them with the Bills over the last few days. I was there Saturday and today and had a couple of impressions. If you'd want to chime in, anything you've seen, you can watch the practice for yourself, at least highlights of it on BuffaloBills.com on our Bills Roundup. But give us a call. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of impressions, and we're going to get to Sammy Watkins in a minute. He clearly was the standout here. The offensive linemen are just huge. Cyrus Quanjo, our guest in the 7 o'clock hour. Cyril Richardson, 5th-round pick. Chantrell Henderson, 7th-round pick, bigger than both of them. Just huge. I mean, you can't miss that when you watch these rookies out on the field. If nothing else, the Bills' offensive line will get a big upgrade in terms of size. And look where it was compared to a couple of years ago. I mean, Lavitre was not big by offensive line standards. We got some big guys here, and they're spending a lot of time on the fundamentals. That basically was what the practices were all about. In fact, head coach Marone talked earlier in the weekend about part of what they do during this rookie minicamp is just indoctrinate these players into what drills they want to run. And a lot of interesting drills for the offensive linemen. We talked to Quancho about it, focusing on hand movements. You know, have the O-linemen kneeling down and trying to get their hands up as quickly as possible. Quancho looked extremely athletic doing that. Richardson maybe a little bit less so, but I think he's going to be all right. Chantrell Henderson has all the ability you need, and we've talked about him at length about the risk factor for a guy like that who had his troubles at University of Miami, but we'll see. Clean slate for him now, and he's certainly got a ton of talent. I was impressed with Ross Cockrell, fourth-round draft pick from Duke, the cornerback. I think, he was easily the standout among the defensive backs, Ross Cockrell, although there were some interesting work turned in by defensive back Michael Carter, a free agent rookie from Minnesota. Wore number 47. I thought he had some interesting things out there, too. But Cockrell looked smooth, seemed to have good hands from what we could tell. They did a lot of work with the jugs machine to test the reaction time in the hands of some of these defensive backs. And it's all about technique with these guys. And I don't think there's any better suited coach than Donnie Anderson to school these young defensive backs. I noticed how much attention today that Donnie Anderson was focusing on Ross Cockrell, the fourth-round pick from Duke. And I thought to myself, that's good. That's a good thing. Because last year at this time during OTAs, Donnie Anderson was merciless in riding Aaron Williams, the young defensive back who the Bills moved to safety. I mean, just brutal almost, to the point of, pushing, I think, almost, a little bit too hard. And look what it produced. Aaron Williams was a standout for the Bills in the secondary this year. A lot of attention focused on Ross Cockrell, which I think is a good thing for him. Some interesting wide receiver prospects. I thought Fred Lee from University at Buffalo acquitted himself quite well. One of the better wide receivers, not in Sammy Watkins' class. I thought another guy here on a tryout, Ivan McCartney from West Virginia, has got an interesting backstory. I thought he had a pretty good weekend from what I could see, the two practices. You know how weird it is to have players on the roster in camp who ran track with your son? Can you imagine that, Jay? Two of them, the two Buffalo kids.
I personally can't imagine that.
Derek Brim, who obviously played defensive back at UB, Canisius High School product, and Jimmy Gaines, who played linebacker at the University of Miami, Gettysville, New York, both Canisius High School products. It's crazy. I said to my son, Jack, these guys, these guys. They said to say hi. Jack's like, yeah, sweet. He's a good dude. That's what I get out of Jack. But it's kind of crazy.
You don't say that about NFL players. But...
he's a good dude. Yeah. I mean, that's just a personal observation. It kind of freaks me out a little bit. Kids who were on my son Jack's track team are now trying out for the Bills. The star of the weekend, obviously, Sammy Watkins, the Bills' first-round draft choice, the elite player, fourth overall, wide receiver out of Clemson. And Doug Marrone today, in wrapping up the weekend minicamp, had a few thoughts on his assessment of Sammy Watkins and his rookie weekend minicamp.
For me, I mean, I would say, that I thought after having watched him now for a couple of days, in my assessment of him, that he probably has better hand-eye coordination than I thought coming in to it. But I'm excited. I'm excited to see him. Again, I think for me the big thing is, I've always been this way, and I've said this before. You guys have been around. I really look forward to when the pads come on and we start playing football and really evaluating people then.
That's Marrone talking about Sammy Watkins, and what he's really saying there is looking forward to seeing him in a football-type situation, whether it's probably have to wait till training camp, maybe some of the mandatory mini camp. But a situation where Sammy Watkins has to get off press coverage. Now, I asked Chris Sims about it, mostly because Marrone mentioned it Saturday as, the next hurdle, the next thing he wants to see from Sammy Watkins. Chris Sims, our guest earlier this hour, seemed to think that Watkins wouldn't have any problem with that at all, but we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to tell you right now he's got it licked and he's going to the Pro Bowl, but certainly he was a standout by a long shot in the rookie minicamp this past weekend. After today's workout, Sammy Watkins met with a group of media guys and was asked a couple of questions, including what it was like, his first rookie weekend minicamp.
It was definitely what I expected, come out here and work hard with the guys and get my footsteps in the right right routes and right yardage. That's just been the hardest thing is transitioning from college to the pros and getting the right coaching. And so far, I see myself getting 10 times better just on my route running my mechanics and working on the little things.
Coach Marone said that you were in like 6:45 this morning on your own. I mean, is that right? What time did you get here, and why did you get here to kind of go the extra mile, for lack of a better term?
Well, for me, I think I need to work on my routes more than anything. I have the speed and the size and the ability. Now it's just down to the details and the little things, because in this league, the cornerbacks are great. You know, they can detail, they know your details of your route, so you have to be crisp and right on everything you do, and got to make everything look the same. And I woke up this morning, that's what I was trying to do, stay straight, keep my head up, and I work on my routes and my breaking points.
Sammy, did you figure there would be that kind of difference from college to pros in terms of the precision of the routes that you have to run? Did that take you by surprise at all over the last week or so here?
Most definitely. I know this game is totally different from college. It's still the same sport, but now guys are 10 times smarter. This is your job. So you're going to do anything in your power to get better at your steps or your speed or just getting the right rest, eating right. So now is the time to work on the little things, and that's break points and eyes, working on the fluidity of your routes.
How much do you look forward to testing yourself against a guy like Gilmore or McKelvin when those vets come?
Oh, it takes time. Those guys been 2 and 3 years. So, I mean, they're going to win most of the matchups, and I'm going to win mine. And I just got to compete every day, go out there with a works mentality, and know it's going to be positive and negative at this early stage.
Sammy, you feel like these 3 days were a good springboard, though, for OTAs? Kind of let's get the feet wet kind of thing?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I'm learning the plays now. I'm getting my feet wet with the other guys. And now it's going to become a habit now, just going out there working with EJ and the other wide receivers, and just getting accustomed to the offense and how the offense works and how the coaches coach me.
Gotta say, I'm impressed by Sammy Watkins' approach when he talks about all he has to learn. Can you think how easy it might have been for another guy, anybody really, to come in as the fourth overall pick, as a guy that you know the team that drafted you made a big move, gave up next year's first rounder to get you? To come in as really one of the elite players in the draft this year and figure that, well, I've got this. This is the NFL, but I've got this. I was the best receiver in college. Not getting that at all from Sammy Watkins. Not at all. He's talking about learning how to run routes. He says he's better now than he was at Clemson because he's learned how to run routes. He does a lot of extra work before and after. In fact, he was here early this morning, I think before 6 in the morning, to get ready to work, and was on the field running routes against air, according to the head coach. Here's what Watkins said about how early he gets there and the kind of work he's been doing.
You hear very early, around 5:45, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you just get your breakfast in, then you work out around 8. And then after that, you got meetings. Then after that, you come out here. It was an early day today, so we're getting out early. And we just come out here and get our work in. Basically, just getting the fundamentals. That's what mini camp out is, learning. And it's been a great learning experience here, and I got to get better.
How cool is it that Sammy Watkins wants to work that hard in his first weekend? Doesn't have a contract yet, by the way. That's not going to be a problem. But in his first weekend, he's working that hard. It's something that was noticed by the head coach, Doug Marone, when he addressed the media today. Talked about Sammy Watkins' work ethic, which is already on display.
Someone told me today that he was in here like 6:45 running routes on air.
Sure.
I mean, someone told me that. And those are things that are encouraging. And I think that's what those are the things that you want to hear. You know, you want to hear about that. You know, you don't want to leave anything for chance, and, you know, you just want to make sure the performance on the field judges whether you're good enough or you're not good enough. You know, but you don't want to look back and look in the mirror and say, gosh, I wish I would have done a little bit extra here, a little bit extra there, because it's not like you're going to go down to AAA, you know, and get a chance to do this again. A lot of times in this league you get one shot. I've always thought about the players that maybe might have learned a lesson after being cut, you know. How many of those guys would have come back and really been good football players if there was, you know, some sort of developmental process?
Well, I think Coach Marone is on to something big there. We've talked about this on the show before. I think the NFL would benefit a great deal from a feeder league, a minor league, that would tutor players, young guys, teach them, you know, what teams are looking for and how to practice and how to be a pro, especially with all those underclassmen coming out now. I think that'd be a great benefit. But we're focused on Sammy Watkins and all the stuff he's done well. And now Watkins looks ahead. They've got the voluntary off-season conditioning program for the next 8 days or so, and then 9 days away, organized team activity. Watkins says he's really looking forward, especially after this weekend, to getting down to work with his new quarterback, E.J. Manuel.
I can't wait. That's the best time when you got the right time with the quarterbacks, and you got the older guys at the wideout teaching the routes, the steps, and the releases. That's just going to be timing also. So I can't wait to get started with him. We had an earlier on when we was working out, I caught a couple balls from him. It went well.
Sammy Watkins, by a long shot, the standout from the first weekend here of the rookie mini camp. We'll see. I can't wait to see him with the vets. And as I said, as far as any kind of meaningful teamwork, even on 7-on-7 work, you might have to wait until the OTAs coming up or even farther than that, maybe into the mandatory minicamp to see that. But I can't wait. I think it's going to be a lot of fun for Sammy Watkins. A tweet here from Andy Mack says, can you comment on the atmosphere at One Bills Drive? What's the feeling of players and coaches? Can you compare it to past years? Yeah, I can try. I will tell you this. It's pretty upbeat here at One Bills Drive. You know what? It's pretty upbeat in 31 other NFL cities as well. I mean, it just is. This time of year, everybody's through the draft now. Everybody's looking at the players they drafted and the free agents they added. People are coming around for OTAs. We'll get to the mini camp season in the next couple of weeks and then the break before training camp begins. Optimism exists all over the league, and it certainly is the motivating force right here at One Bills Drive these days. I think there's a sense that in the second year under Doug Marrone and Nathaniel Hackett, that they're ready to take the next step forward. And I do think there's a sense, and we talked about this a lot on the show, that a lot of this is on the shoulders of E.J. Manuel in his second year. I think everybody kind of knows and feels like he's the guy. The defense is in place, looking to pick up where they left off last year, even with the change in scheme and change in coordinator. And the weapons are around E.J. Manuel now. So a lot of it is on him. I guess that would be my capsule description of the atmosphere here at One Bills Drive. Jay Harris, producer, do you have anything you care to add to that? You're kind of the newbie here. What have you been here, 2.5 months?
Yeah, beginning of March, so.
Your thoughts on the atmosphere? On. You're good? The coffee machines work?
Yeah, everything works. I have my waters here. No, but it's nice to see the players around here. We talked about this when the workouts began,
yeah,
too.
Makes a difference, doesn't it?
It does. And I joked about it that all I was seeing was hard hats my first couple weeks here because of all the construction here. But it does. It kind of brings an energy to the building. And no matter who it is, the veterans or the rookies, but actually seeing the productivity on the field, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool atmosphere, and everybody's excited. And granted, they're rookies, but I mean, you expect that. I think everybody's high and getting ready to go here. And geez, a few short months will be training camp.
Yeah. 2 months from today, I would think. Yeah. It's right about the time we're going to be in training camp.
It's going to go quick now. It's going to start speeding up.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. The phone lines remain open if you have a comment or a question. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. And you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We are presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Just a couple minutes left in tonight's show. Tomorrow night, we're already putting together a good show. I'm excited about this guest, Jerry Sandusky. Not that one. This guy is the voice of the Baltimore Ravens. He has been for the last several years. His father was a longtime assistant coach in the league and interim head coach of the Baltimore Colts, John Sandusky. He was a Shula guy. Jerry Sandusky has written an outstanding book, Forgotten Sundays. I'm about halfway through it. I'll get the plow through most of the rest of it tonight. But it's about his upbringing as the son of a famous assistant coach and bouncing around the league a little bit. Jerry Sandusky is going to be with us to talk about his book tomorrow. It's called Forgotten Sundays. Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for ESPN Boston, is going to join us. We're trying to check in with the other teams in the AFC East as they assess what they got in the draft and as they move towards their OTAs. And Mike Reese of ESPN Boston among our guests tomorrow night. We expect to talk a little bit more over the next few days about the NFL owners' meetings. The spring meeting is kicked off today in Atlanta. They're talking about a variety of things. We talked about the playoff expansion from 12 to 14. They're going to determine who's going to host Super Bowl 52. That is more than 3 years away. It would be February of 2018. New Orleans considered to be the front runner for Super Bowl 52. It would be, what is that, the tricentennial for New Orleans in 2018. Minneapolis, with a brand-new stadium, is a contender. And Indianapolis, which hosted Super Bowl 46, also a finalist for Super Bowl 52. That decision should come this week at the spring meetings in Atlanta. The owners are going to talk about workplace conduct and environment, an outgrowth of the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin story. They met with the Players Association about that a few weeks ago. The future of the draft is believed to be on the table. Several options being considered, including changing the date. There's some sentiment that it might be moved back a week. At, you know, they pushed it back 2 weeks into May this year. Maybe they'll bring it back 1 week earlier, maybe to the end of April this year. That's one of the discussions. They're talking about using multiple cities, not just New York City and Radio City, and multiple cities, Chicago among them, already campaigning to host the draft. So you expect some changes in that. And maybe not, you know, decisions made this week, but certainly discussion at the owners' meeting. The one that most of us are keeping an eye on, however, is the expansion of the playoff field from 12 to 14. And as we said, most reports say that decision's not going to be made this week or today, really, tomorrow in Atlanta. But it sounds like there's a consensus forming to add two new teams to the playoffs after the 2015 season. So we'll keep our eyes on that as the day moves along. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. We are back on the air with a two-hour show tomorrow night, 7 to 9 p.m. As we said, Jerry Sandusky, the voice of the Baltimore Ravens, will join us to talk about his book, Forgotten Sundays, and Mike Reese will clue us in on what's going on with the New England Patriots. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer is Tom Reitz. Our producer is Jay Harris. And the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. See you tomorrow at 7 with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.